This is Debbie Q, and you're listening to The Right Show. The Right Show is a podcast about all things strange and unusual, especially when it references a death. I just got a new Rodecaster. There was something wrong with the headphone jack. Sweetwater was awesome in getting me a new one. Lickety split. I literally got it the day after, and it was New Year's Eve. So is that a good new, a good New Year's omen? I hope so. Now, this is going to be one tough case. What happened was I had cases lined up, and then the Zodiac Z340 was cracked. It didn't say anything. It didn't reveal the guy's name. It didn't, say what it was supposed to say. But it did, it was cracked. I thought, hey, in my stupidity, I'll do the Zodiac next. And then I remembered why I never, ever take on serial killers. In this case, in all my years, for some reason, I never had gotten into the Zodiac. I don't know why. I didn't know much about it. And in fact, when I was younger, in the 90s, I was living in New York, and there was the New York Zodiac Killer. And I assumed that the original Zodiac was caught also. I just had never got into it. So when the New York Zodiac, there was a guy, Heriberto Zeta, and when he was killing people between 1990 and 1993, he was actually starting to follow the wheel of the Zodiac. I do remember that. And I remember people thinking like, oh my God, this guy's got this magic way. He's going about the stars. He's this astrology master. I remember. And then when they caught him in 96, he said, I was just killing people. I really did not have any. I was just lucky. So I have to say, in some aspects, with this Zodiac, the original Zodiac, it's truly a rabbit hole. The more you get into it, the more you feel like you're going crazy. I mean, there is such... this guy was either a genius or he was just lucky. Or, I went back and forth thinking, is there two of them? Was there more than one? But, I mean, the thing is, you have investigators that had investigated this case ad nauseum, and they determined that there was five cases, just like Jack the Ripper, that are agreed upon that they were the work of one person. So I tend to respect investigators, and I feel that those who came before me were authentic in their knowledge of what they were looking at, and it was one person for these five. For the five that were, yes, these are the Zodiacs. There are a few that really are so similar, I can't imagine that they're not the Zodiac. And especially the one, because there's two of them have to be the Zodiac. And then you get your crackpots. But, it's all coming. I hope I can do this justice. For the Right Shoe business, I would like to say Happy New Year 2021. Bring it on. Let's hope that it's better than 2020. I actually didn't have a bad 2020, but I mean, in general, it was pretty sad to see, even just school children who really wanted to finish out their school year, never got the opportunity. People that are in sports never got to do their sporting events. People that had proms, weddings, children got all screwed up. That sucks. So for that, I have to say, you know, what can you do? It sucks. It really does. I sympathize with anybody who had something big that they wanted to do and did not get to do it because of 2020 and COVID and all that. Myself, I'm at a point where I just started a podcast, and it really was kind of the right timing because people seem to be home and listening, you know. But I have to say, at the same time, it does get boring just sitting in your house all the time, no matter what you're doing. So, the Right Shoe business, the Right Shoe is a podcast, all things strange and unusual, especially when it references a death. TheRightShoePodcast.com. I really do go to Instagram the most. ShopaholicDev44. On Twitter, I'm BookshopWorm1. But you can mostly get me through my email on TheRightShoePodcast.com, where there's pictures to correlate with each and every episode. I feel so out of sorts because I did a couple in a row and then a Christmas one, which was just saying Merry Christmas. And I feel so, oh my God, I'm almost nervous because I have all these notes and I'm frantic because this case is a little bit overwhelming. I am not been doing this for years on end like some people. I really am amazed at what people have gone through. And it is like Jack the Ripper. There's five distinct cases that belong to this one guy that I hope and pray because it was in the late 60s. So you figure there's got to be still some people. You know, I think the guy's probably dead. But there's got to be something to crack it possibly still. And you know that there's got to be still victims' families alive. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Some of the people were in their 20s. That was 50 years ago. So they would be in their 70s now. All that life lost. All those years. And then you think of those victims and how, you know, they were all good kids. You know, it's heartbreaking. It really is. So to find this guy, and there's websites devoted to it, it is amazing. I did go through a few to research this. I, of course, read the masterful Zodiac by Robert Graysmith, who the 2007 film Zodiac was based on, which if you haven't seen, you should see it. It's with Jake Gyllenhaal and Robert Downey Jr. They are excellent in their roles. Robert Graysmith became completely obsessed. It was funny. I saw an interview and he said, I didn't think I was obsessed until I saw this movie. You know, I can see how he became obsessed. It's fascinating. I want a few shout outs. My friends on Instagram, Grizzly Books and True Crime Bones. They are now on Patreon, so I'd love to say good luck to them, and I'm so glad. Also, there's a site on Instagram that I have to give a shout out to. I do enjoy their work. It's really good. It's called My Little Slice of Hell, and he has a lot of really funny memes, little videos. I think it's something if you're on Instagram, take a look at. It's really good. And if you like The Right Shoe, like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review. I think that takes care of all the business. And now let's get started. This case is a doozy and a half. To get this case out, I'm going to have to break it down. I cannot possibly do all that the guy claimed that he did, or there was a lot of cases that could have been the Zodiac. There's 5 confirmed dead and 2 injured. And then there are 2 cases that I really do believe are part of the Zodiac, but there's 5 confirmed victims dead. And 2 were injured. So that's how I can put it. Those are the ones we're going to be going over. Now, the Zodiac was unusual, and not only did he kill these people, he tormented law enforcement. He tormented the newspapers. He really did. He must have, but he wasn't like a dumb guy. I mean, he never was caught. He wrote these ciphers that they compared one, the Z-340. They said, I mean, they had FBI and NSA, everybody looking at it and trying to decipher it, and they couldn't. They could not figure out what, for years and years. The initial one, there was a school teacher, the last name Hardin, who had figured out, with him and his wife Betty, had figured out the first code. That took, you know, he said he was about to give up, but his wife just refused. And that took a while. And then, you know, the Zodiac killer just would taunt with these constant letters and constant ciphers. And there was many of them, and there were some that were really bizarre. How it all started was there was a couple, David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen. And they were going on, they were two good kids, and they were going on their first date together. It was December 20th, 1968, 5 days before Christmas. They were a cute couple, and they were both good, solid kids. Although, this is where I start to even think of who could it be, because Betty Lou had told her sister, Melody, that she felt that a boy at school had been spying on her. And one time, Mrs. Jensen, her mother, had said the gate was open to the side of the house. So she was, you know, they were leery of this one boy. Although, after this happened, they did go to that boy, and he had this rock-solid alibi. But it still made me think maybe there was another boy because of certain things that were to come. So that night, they promised to be home by 11 o'clock. They said they were going to go to this Christmas concert, and afterward they were going to go to a party. Instead of going to the concert, the two went to visit another student named Sharon. And at 9 o'clock, Sharon said that she walked them to their car. Now, from investigators going through this, they said that I guess instead of going to the party they were supposed to go to, they went to Lake Herman Road, which was a few miles outside of Vallejo city limits. Through testimony and witnesses and interviews, at 9:30, an unusual incident, and this is from the book Zodiac, because I had to write this down. It was so bizarre to me. Before something happened to this poor couple, a boy and his date were parked in the girl's sports car, and they saw a blue Valiant. It was close to a blue Valiant. They're not sure if it was coming up the road. They saw the white backup lights come on. Then the car started backing up towards them with excruciating slowness. Such menace, they said it felt so wrong the way he was doing it. And you can tell when someone's messing with you. Like, if you're in a car and someone's backing up and they're doing it so excruciatingly slow, like, as to get your attention, that this guy took off. He put the car into high gear and sped off. Several people had seen Betty Lou and David sitting in the seat. You know, I think they were probably making out or whatever. But then they came up the next time. Raccoon hunters did say they saw a man wearing glasses with a windbreaker on. He was also up there, but they didn't think nothing of it. The thing that freaks me out when what happened was, I guess they didn't come home. You know, it's 11 o'clock and they were very good kids. So she went up to where she had seen David parked. And when she turned the corner, she thought that that David had fallen out of the car. And then she saw Betty Lou. Now, there's pictures on the internet, of course. There's always pictures. The sight of Betty Lou Jensen is so horrific. I mean, she is literally face down in this massive pool of blood. It is a very eerie picture. I did not realize they even, these pictures are very creepy. So this guy, when they backtracked to find out what had happened, this guy had come up. And this is what I don't understand. He had apparently fired a bullet behind them to get them to go out of the car. But I asked Homicide this. I said, why did they not take off? Why did they run out of the car, which is what they did? And when they ran out of the car, he shot them. He shot them repeatedly. Yes, it was in the dark. And they said, with incredible marksmanship, a moving target and an almost dark country road, he got both of them. But when he was to taunt the papers and everything, he said that he had like this little pencil type scope, that this little apparatus that he had made, like a flashlight, a little pencil flashlight taped to the scope of the gun. So whatever he pointed it at, it would hit. I mean, can you imagine in the middle of the night, in the darkened night, and that comes up to you? I mean, did they just get so scared that they ran out of the car? I just can't imagine doing that to anybody. Oh my God, it's so horrific. So the police cruisers come up. The ignition switch was on. The right front door was wide open. And the other three doors in the tailgate was locked. They found 22 casings on the front of the floor. There was no signs of a struggle or visible tire tracks. I just, you know, so this happens. So this happens one cold winter's night. And then the next incident is when it really gets freaky. Now, this involves Darlene Ferrin and Mike McGew. And Mike McGew would later scout a guy named Arthur Leigh Allen as the person who did this to them that night, because he was to survive this attack. Darlene has quite the backstory. Now, Darlene was a party girl. She was just a fun girl. And she was married twice. Like, she had been married to this guy, Jim, and Jim freaked her out, and he sent her things in the mail, and people said that, like, they felt uneasy with him. And even oddly worse is when they went to the Virgin Islands on their honeymoon, Darlene had seen a murder. This is what she claimed to her sister while they were in the Virgin Islands. And she was very spooked after that. I mean, obviously. But she broke up with Jim. She was married to another guy. She still, like, hung out with guys. But they said clearly she was not, like, a hoe. She wasn't a runaround. Like, she was just a fun party girl. It's just the way she was. They had a party, and there was, like, a stocky guy. And Linda, her sister, said it was the one guy that she didn't know at the party. And she never did know who he was. But he was stocky, which is how the Zodiac is always described. Overweight, 5'8" tall. And Darlene seemed very nervous that night. Linda, don't go near him. Just don't talk to him. Well, who is he? Just don't talk to him. That's how it was when she just thought, okay, you know, so she stayed away from him. Her sister said she remembered seeing this man leave a package at their house. I guess she was talking to him, and Darlene said, you know, Pam, I'm going to have to ask you to stop talking at my parties if you don't stop talking to that guy. He was a very well-dressed guy with glasses. He had dark hair. For some reason, I think Darlene met this man in the Virgin Islands. She mentioned drugs in connection with this guy, and people were constantly going to the bathroom. She was never allowed back there. So, God, you know, who can, you know, figure that one out for yourselves? She just doesn't remember his name. So the one night, it was, I guess, it was July 4th, 1969. She was going to go out with this guy, Mike McGew. Now, Darlene seemed to have a lot of guys, like, jealous of her or wanting to go out with her. I don't know if Mike McGew's attentions at the time were anything different, but apparently he was supposed to be just a friend. They were going to go see fireworks that night. Mike immediately thought they were being followed. I don't want to mention the movie too much because it visually, it helps. In the movie, this is represented as the first killing, and you see that she is obviously nervous. the guy in the passenger car is trying to, you know, say, who is that? And it does appear that she knows who it is. And it is even freakier about what happens next. Now, this guy gets out of the car. He gets a blinding flashlight, which Mike later said was like a floating lantern. He thought it was a flash. He thought it was a policeman at first because of the... He thought it was like a policeman's flashlight, but it turned out to be one of those floating lanterns like you see on boats. And the guy goes to the passenger side of the car and the window's down and he just starts shooting. And then he recedes from the car and then he goes back and he continues to shoot. And Mike goes to grab the passenger handle side door. And there's no handle. And he said, I couldn't do nothing. So he kind of leaped in the back of the car. But he heard the guy call Darlene D. So he said, I feel that he knew Darlene. And Darlene knew who it was. Because initially she said, don't worry about it. Until the guy came back. And he said, get your driver's license out. It's a cop. Except it wasn't a cop. And he shot them several times. I mean... He said, but he got a good look at him. And he said he had a large face, stocky man, but he wasn't wearing glasses. He seemed to be like 26 to 30 years old, short, curly brown hair, and a military-style crew cut. Beefy, heavy set between like 180, 200 pounds, but he wasn't fat. And he just... kept firing. And he must have thought he killed both of them because he drove away. But he didn't kill Mike. And this time, he called the police. The guy calls the police and he says, I want to report a double murder. If you go 1 mile east, and the woman, Nancy Slover, tried to interrupt him, but the guy just barreled over what she said. If you go 1 mile east on Columbus Parkway to the public park, you will find kids in a brown car. They were shot with a 9mm Luger. I also killed those kids last year. Goodbye. And she said when the guy said goodbye, he sounded like he was being kind of cocky. And he left the phone dangling. And there was a guy, there was a middle-aged black guy that was passing by and happened to see this because they did get a palm print off of this telephone later on. The problem with this case also is because it happened in different counties, and this still goes on to this day, honest to God, which sucks, but it's true. They don't always say, you know, all of the information that they have about a case, which really back then, you know, nowadays information so out there. I mean, we have the Citizens app, which in Philadelphia, unfortunately, is going off every second. And there was 499 murders. We didn't hit 500. But I'm suspicious that the one that was called in at 1230 was secretly called in before 1230 because they didn't want it to say that we had 500 murders. So, okay, I'm starting to feel a little better now. So this guy, so they get the palm print, but yes, they did not share information. So this really impeded progress back then. But Mike survived, and that was a good thing because at least they got, well, they got the start of a really difficult case. This is when the letters started. The cryptogram started. The strange symbol started. The writer of the letters to newspapers, to law enforcement agencies, he would take credit for the murders of David and Betty Lou and Darlene. He thought he killed Mike, but he didn't. Mike was to survive. So he wrote his first letter to the editor. Since Jack the Ripper, it wasn't done like this. People didn't write letters to the editor. Killers didn't write letters to the editor. And it said this, Dear Editor, this is the murder of the two teenagers last Christmas at Lake Herman and the girl on the 4th of July near the golf course in Vallejo. To prove I killed them, I shall state some facts which only I and the police know. Christmas, brand name of ammo, Super X, which was correct. It was Super X brand. It was copper coated. 10 shots were fired. 3, the boy was on his back with his feet to the car. 4, the girl was on her right side to the west. 4th of July, which was the Darlene and Mike McGew, one girl was wearing patterned slacks. The boy also shot 2. The boy was also shot in the knee. 3, brand name of ammo was Western. Here is a part of the cipher. The other 2 parts of the cipher are being mailed to the editors. And this is what started off with the Z240 and the Z340 and all that stuff. I want you to print this cipher on the front page of your paper. In this cipher is my identity. If you do not print this cipher by the afternoon of Friday, 1st of August, 69, I will go on a killing rampage Friday night. But he spells it Fry, F-R-Y. I will cruise all around weekend killing lone people in the night, then move on to kill again until I end up with a dozen people over the weekend. Now, he sounds like an idiot the way he writes, but the guy was no fool. The codes were very intense, and he sent out this code that, I mean, I can put the code on therightshoepodcast.com. I don't think he ever thought anyone would crack it. Donald Gene Harden and his wife Betty would crack it. And Donald Gene Harden said it was because of his wife's doggedness that he found. You know, he was the instigator, but she was the finisher. And this was the first cipher. I like killing people because it is so much fun. It is more fun than killing wild game in the forest because man is the most dangerous animal of all to kill. Something gives me the most thrilling experience. It is even better than getting your rocks off with a girl. The best part is that they, spelled T-H-A-E, when I die, I will be reborn in paradise and they have killed will become my slaves. They I have killed will become my slaves. I will not give you my name because you will try to slow down or atop my collection of slaves for the afterlife. Now there was a few letters left, and within the letters they thought this has to be his name. The name they came up with was Robert Emmett the Hippie, or Emmett O'Wright, Robert Hemphill, Van M. Blackman, I M. O'Riot, Kenneth O'Wright, Leo Blackman, F.L. Boone, Timothy E. Fieberty. I mean, this guy was a real piece of work. So they had everybody on this damn cryptogram, and they just couldn't find it. I mean, it was just crazy. You know, it really was. This is when the next killing began, and this was on September 27th, 1969. Now, this killing would hark back to a 1963 killing, which I cannot imagine was, it would just be wild for it to be a different person because everything was done the same. It was astounding. Okay. And the thing that makes this so spooky scary is that these two, another good pair of kids, Cecilia Shepherd, she was 22, Brian Hartnell was 20. And good-looking couple, they were in, I think Cecilia had wanted to go to San Francisco, maybe. I'm not sure where she initially wanted to go to, but they went to Lake Berryessa, which I've seen pictures of, and it is just gorgeous. Now, the dangerous game, it still gets my brain rolling. Now, they laid down on the grass, and Cecilia could make out a figure of a man in the distance immediately. And he was freaking her out because apparently the way he was moving was odd. And he was like in and out, in and out. And she could see him, she couldn't. She could see him, she couldn't. And then suddenly he came straight out and he was wearing like an executioner's outfit, which they said it looked like a medieval executioner's outfit. When he came out, she saw that he had a gun. She said, you know, okay. She heard the rustling of leaves, and she said, it's that man. He said, is he alone? And she said, he just stepped from behind the tree. And he said, well, keep looking and tell me what happens. Then the stocky man came from behind the tree, and Cecilia noticed that he had a gun. Now, the man circled them, and when he came out, he had on this ceremonial midnight black hood, square on top, with four corners like a paper sack. He resembled some executioner from the Middle Ages. It was a bizarre, there was like slits in the eyes and a mouth cut into the cloth. He wore a pair of clip-on sunglasses over them. And Brian said that he was stunned at how ingenious the mask was devised. Like, it was inventive. The man's dark sleeves were clamped tight around his wrists. His pants were tucked into his boots. They looked like he was wearing some sort of military type, rubbers they call them, boots. But the ones that you can stick your pant legs into. On one side, he had a knife strapped to him, and it looked at least a foot long. And around his waist was a holster. So he was solid. He wasn't fat. He came toward him with a semi-automatic pistol. He, you know, right away, Brian said, I just tried to, you know, talk to him. Now, this is what gets to me every time. He said the voice was like that of a student. It was kind of a drawl, but not a southern drawl. It was a slow drawl, like of that of a kid. I want your money and your car keys. And then Brian thought, okay, it's just a robbery. And Brian thought to himself that he didn't seem well educated, but he wasn't illiterate. So again, it goes back to all these misspellings with the cryptograms, but yet they couldn't, you know, the FBI and all them couldn't crack it. So he was like an idiot savant, I would call that, you know, like you're kind of dopey, but you're a genius in some parts, a modern day, you know, Asperger's kind of guy. He had a black blue windbreaker on, and he could see that there was a circle with that cross symbol, and it was sewn on. Black gloves, and he was about 6 feet tall. Brian was tall, so he said he was a bad judge of height. He came over to them, asked them, Brian said, I don't have any money, but I can help you. And he said, no, I'm an escaped convict from Montana. I've killed a prison guard, and I've stolen a car. I have nothing to lose. I'm flat broke. And Brian said, well, wouldn't you rather be stuck on a stealing charge than a homicide? And he said, don't start playing hero and don't try to grab the gun. Brian said he didn't think the gun would be loaded and he was trying to call his bluff. He gave him his keys and they talked for quite a while. The guy was probably just getting off on the fact that he was going to kill these kids. So he told them, I lay face down on the ground. I'm going to tie you up. And Brian said, I became really annoyed at the thought of being tied up. I just wanted, you know, this to be done. She said Cecilia was really scared. And the guy looked at the hooded masked man, looked at Cecilia and said, you tie that boy up. She tied him really loose, you know, so that he could keep his hands apart. Her hands were shaking, and the guy retied them very tightly. That's when he started getting nervous. Brian said, why would anyone tie you up after they had robbed you or found out you didn't have any money? Why didn't he have me walk 100 yards the other way and say, don't turn around? It didn't make any sense. Like, he was probably getting more. That poor kid. I mean, can you imagine? And then the worst thing of all, he started stabbing them. Now, can you imagine laying there and being stabbed? Do you know how bad of pain these two kids must have been in? I mean, they must have been in horrible, horrible pain.
No, 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 no!
It breaks my heart thinking of them. Again, the killer thought that he had killed both kids, so he left. And there was a fisherman who eventually found them, called the police, and the investigators, when they went to get to the car, they found inscribed in black felt-tip pen, Vallejo 12-2068, 7-4-69, September 27, 69 at 6:30 by knife. They were the dates of the killings in Vallejo and Solano counties. You know, apparently he had moved north. At this time, they didn't realize it, but and they would start to really investigate this and go back over the Zodiac. I mean, they were investigating. They had a task force and everything else. They would find that in June 3rd, 1963, Robert Domingo and Linda Edwards, they were both ditching school. And same thing that happened to Brian and Cecilia had happened to this couple. Robert Domingo and Linda Edwards, June 3rd, 1963, Gaviota Beach. They had decided to go for senior ditch day and they had parked off of Highway 101 and went down to the shore. No one knows the precise timing or sequence of events, but at some point they were confronted with an armed man, 22 caliber weapon, possibly a rifle. The man produced pre-cut lengths of rope and ordered Linda to tie Robert's hands. After that, the man may have tried to bind Linda's hands, but Robert somehow freed himself and fought back enough for the couple to run away. The man apparently shot both Robert and Linda in the back, and they fell to the ground together. He then reloaded his weapon and fired many more shots into the victims. The men then dragged the bodies to a makeshift shack and threw the victims inside. The killer collected the couple's belongings and tossed them into the shack, and he tried to set the place on fire. That was the only difference. The parents became concerned when the teenagers never returned home. A member of Robert's family remembered that the couple had been to a spot on Gaviota Beach. That's when they discovered the murdered teenagers. And it remained unsolved. In 1970, Detective Bill Baker was assigned to the cold case in Santa Barbara, and he'd been looking over it, and he contacted the San Francisco Police Inspector William Armstrong, who had been assigned to the Zodiac investigation, with his partner, Inspector David Tosche, who would be instrumental in the Zodiac case. He believed that the Zodiac may have killed Robert Domingos and Linda Edwards, and according to Baker, Armstrong said he would never think of the Zodiac crimes again without including this 1963 case, which I agree. It just seems very, very strange. It's just so similar. Unless the man, I mean, I'm just going over this in my head. Unless whoever did this, the Zodiac, if truly the Zodiac had only killed 5 people and wounded 2, although I do believe there's one more that he did, and we're going to get to that. Maybe he had heard about that and just kind of the real Zodiac had copycatted that particular one because he thought it was cool or liked it. I mean, I'm trying to figure it out because, you know, because you'd look up because the Zodiac had been more than one person. But if you're just going by the 5 and the 2 dead victims and the 2 that survived, I think they were done by one person. I really do. And I also think this girl, Sherry Jo Bates, was a part of the Zodiac victims, which happened on October 30th, 1966, because of the person that I think the Zodiac was. I'm trying to do this in order because it's easy to start getting so worked up about who the Zodiac was that you want to get to that part. The next one that would be the Zodiac would be, and this is the thing with the Zodiac. This is why the Zodiac is so difficult of a case. He never really followed a set pattern. His MO was different. He didn't even use, you know, he killed, he stabbed, he shot. There was nothing that was totally similar except for those ciphers and the constant taunting of the press. And even that, they have a certain amount that was him. And then there's a second book by Robert Graysmith, and he has so many letters that the Zodiac sent the newspapers and the police. Okay, so Paul Stein was a cab driver, and this was a straight up there was this guy. I mean, he was just, he got, there was a fair. He got into the car and he just straight out grabbed him by the throat and squeezed the trigger and killed Paul Lee Stein. It was a 29-year-old cab driver. They killed him. And there, this time there happened to be a party across the street, and they thought that they thought they were looking out the window and seeing a guy being robbed. They didn't really see he was being killed, but they did call the police, and they saw a stocky man cradling the head of the cab driver in his lap. He appeared to be struggling with something or searching for something. The stocky man got out of the cab, and they were calling the police during this time. He turned the corner and passed a mailbox. He went to a phone booth. Now, the APB, this is interesting. There's two different stories. When I was doing my research, I also listened to Generation Y podcast, which had a guy, Mike Morford, who runs a place called ZodiacKillerSite.com. I mean, this guy really has a lot of information. I was fascinated by this one part of the story because I did not know this. In the book, The Zodiac, by Robert Graysmith, it is written that the San Francisco police talked to the Zodiac. What happened was, after he killed Robert Stein, the APB went out that it was a black male adult. That was what the wire came across. And the patrolman, Donald Fwoke, and Eric Zellum saw a man lumbering in the fog. Looking for a black man, they shouted to the stranger and asked if he had seen anything unusual. The stocky man called out, said he saw a man waving a gun running east on Washington, and the patrol car sped off in that direction. Now, I just took that as fact, but when I listened to this podcast, he had said no. That, you know, this was another example of the Zodiac's taunting. The cops said right away that they had heard that the black man, that it wasn't a black man. It was switched to a white male immediately. So they never talked to a guy. Whether they did or not, if they had, I mean, it's true that this guy would have had a 9mm on him. He probably would have shot both of them. You know, that's the thing with the element of surprise is it just reminds me of an incident which I heard from Homicide about 6 months ago, and it was kind of scary. They were doing a warrant. And 9 times out of 10, it's a standard procedure. You go early, you knock on the door, you get in. Usually the person hides on the roof or runs out the back door. But this time there was a guy who had, you know how they open the door? There's a crack. There was a guy that had a 9mm pointed at them. Now he could have shot them. And it was just so happens that SWAT saw it quickly, but it only takes 1 second. So, you know, whether or not these cops talk to them, it kind of sucks because in one aspect, if they did, you know, they lost that opportunity. But if they didn't, or if whatever happened, they probably would have gotten shot anyway. I mean, the guy had blood all over his shirt because the partygoers saw him cradling this guy's head for whatever reason. And he left 2 fingerprints on the car, which is still, I guess, waiting for a match. Nothing has matched it yet. No one has matched it yet that they've fingerprinted. That's really harsh. So that's the closest they got, and that's the last known kill. There have been several instances, like there was a Donna Lass, which I'm not exactly sure. She disappeared from the San Francisco area, and they sometimes associate her with the Zodiac, although you know, the Zodiac claimed that he got 37 people. You know, who knows if this is true or not. Donna Ann Lass disappeared at the age of 25 at Lake Tahoe, California, and was one of the possible victims of the famous Zodiac Killer. She was last seen at approximately 2 a.m. on September 6, 1970. Since that time, no trace of Donna has ever been found. I don't know why they think she's part of the Zodiac. I really don't. But they list her as a possible one. Also, there's another instance that is in that movie again, and that's why I thought I'd mention it. But I don't believe... what happened was there was a girl named Kathleen Johns. She had been abducted. What had happened was... Okay, so this Kathleen Johns, her and her infant daughter were on the way to visit a sick relative in Petaluma, California. She later identified this man as a Zodiac, disabled her car. He said there was something wrong with her car, so she pulled over to have him fix it, only to have it really break when she tried to pull away. So he must have disabled it. If this happened or if this guy did that, people question everything about her story now. Some were saying it was even an insurance try because it was set on fire, the car. John had pulled over because the man had gestured that her wheel was wobbling. He offered to fix the problem, which was made worse. When she pulled back onto the highway, the wheel came off. The man convinced her to accept a ride. As soon as she got in the car, he was driving down these desolate roads, and she jumped out, got away from him. She hid until a trucker came by. Now there's a lot of refuting this story, and I only put it in here because it was in that movie, but I don't even know why what happened was later on the Zodiac must have read about her in the paper and said, oh, that was me, because he was starting to threaten children. He was starting to say, I'm going to kill a busload of children, I'm going to do this if you don't wear Zodiac pins. I'm going to, you know, he was constantly threatening. In fact, in 1970, he wrote this in the second Zodiac Unmasked. Robert Graysmith puts a lot of the Zodiac's letters to the paper in the picture part of the book. And it says, this is the Zodiac speaking. Being that you will not wear some nice button, how about wearing some nasty buttons? And it always has the Zodiac symbol with the circle with the cross in it. Or any type of buttons that you can think of. If you do not wear any type of buttons, I shall torture, on top of everything else, all 13 of my slaves that I have waiting for me in paradise. Some I shall tie over anthills and watch them scream and twitch and squirm. Others will have pine splinters driven underneath their nails and then burned. Others shall be placed in cages and fed salt beef until they are gorged. Then I will listen to their pleas for water and I shall laugh at them. Others will hang by their thumbs and bang. I will rub them with deep heat to warm them up. Others I shall skin them alive while listening the lot of them run around screaming. And all billiard players, I shall have them play in a dark dungeon and with crooked cues and twisted shoes. Yes, I shall have great fun in floating the delicious pain. Oh my goodness, this guy, wow, it's unbelievable. Now, before I go on to the cipher that was just cracked, which made me tackle this whole thing, I will go to who I really do think was the part of the Zodiac tally. I believe this because I think what happened is this. I think this guy, I really believe that this guy was a kid at the time. Sherry Jo Bates was killed on October 30th, 1966. The handwriting that was found after she was killed. Now, what happened was, I do not know what to think. Sherry Jo Bates, the date of the murder was October 30th, 1966. She had to go to the library. she was really upset because she misplaced a huge term paper. So she said, now I'm going to have to start all over again with just my note cards. She went there. She waved. She did not wave back. They don't think that she saw her. They know that she entered the library. Somebody offered her help. They, when they backtracked, they seen that somebody had offered her help, but he got her, this unknown assailant, got her to go down this unlit gravelly road about 75 yards from her car. And then he pressed a knife against her throat and he began choking her. She was an athletic girl and she began to fight back. And she ripped off his wristwatch, which was on the ground. She scratched his face and she had DNA underneath her fingernails. She had been kicked in the head. A short knife had been plunged in her chest twice. Her left cheek and upper lip were cut and 3 slashes in her throat. Her jugular was severed as well as her voice box, and she was almost decapitated. She was face down on the ground when the killer plunged the knife into her left shoulder blade. Churned up ground where they had struggled looked like a freshly plowed field. When her dad came home, he figured that his daughter went out with friends and went to sleep. But when he woke up, he realized that she was gone. And that's when they found her body. And there was one type of shoe print. It was a type of shoe sold only in military outlets. It was a size 8 to 10 and produced by Leavenworth prisoners. They found debris, scrapings of human skin and skin and hair. Now, in the book by Robert Graysmith, he lists her as a definite victim of the Zodiac. Robert Graysmith has he definitely has his thoughts about what, who, why, and where, and nobody's going to change him, and good for him, because, I mean, that's the way you got to be. There was a strange thing that a janitor found. Blue ballpoint pen written on the library desk. Sick of living, unwilling to die, cut clean, if read clean. Blood spurting, dripping, spilling all over her new dress. Oh, well, it was red anyway. Life draining into an uncertain death. She won't die this time. Someone will find her. Just wait till next time. This was a photocopy of something that the Zodiac killer had wrote. She was young and beautiful, but now she is battered and dead. She is not the first and she will not be the last. I lay awake nights thinking about my next victim. Maybe she will be the beautiful blonde that babysits near the little shore and walks down the dark alley each evening about 7. Or maybe she will be the shapely blue-eyed brunette that said no when I asked her for a date in high school. But maybe it will not be either. But I shall cut off her female parts and deposit them for the whole city to see. So don't make it so easy for me. Keep your sisters, daughters, and wives off the streets and alleys. Miss Bates was stupid. She went to the slaughter like a lamb. She did not put up a struggle, but I did. It was a ball. I first pulled the middle wire from the distributor. Then I waited for her in the library and followed her out. About 2 minutes, the battery must have been about dead by then. I then offered to help. She was then very willing to talk to me. I told her that my car was down the street and that I would give her a lift home. When we were away from the library walking, I said it was about time. She asked me about time for what? I said it was about time for you to die. I grabbed her around the neck with my hand over her mouth and my other hand with a small knife at her throat. She went very willingly. Her breast felt very warm and firm under my hands, but only one thing was on my mind. Making her pay for the brush-offs that she had given me during the years prior. She died hard, she squirmed and shook, and I choked her, and her lips twitched. But I let out a scream once, and I kicked her head to shut her up. I plunged a knife into her, and it broke. I then finished the job by cutting her throat. I am not sick, I am not insane, but that will not stop that game. The letter should be published for all to read it. It just may save you that girl in the alley, but that's up to you. It will be on your conscience, not mine. Yes, I did make that call to you. Also, it was just a warning. Beware. I am stalking your girls now. CC, Chief of Police. Enterprise. Now, these were all the killers. These were the kills of the Zodiac, which Sherry, Joe Bates, and the first two, Domingo and Edwards, are not agreed upon by all investigators. The ones agreed upon are the David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen. That was December 20th, 1968. July 4th, 1969, one killed, one wounded. That was the Darlene and Mike Magoo, Darlene Farron. And September 27th, 1969, one wounded, one killed on the Lake Berryessa. And then finally, we have October 11th, 1969, Paulie Stein. Now, Paulie Stein differs because he was a man and he was in a cab. I'm not sure what was going on with the Zodiac, whether it's like the time when the Ripper, at the one time he killed two women in the night, but they think it's because there's five that they pretty much agree upon, but there was two done at night, and the five, which are the agreed upon because of the MO and everything, in the same night. Elizabeth Stride and Catherine Eddowes were both killed. They feel as though he was caught during the killing of, because she wasn't killed in quite the same way as the other five, not as viciously. They believe it's because, like, something got him in the middle of doing it, and that's why he had to kill another person. It was just, and then the last one was just unbelievable. I think that this might have been what happened with the Zodiac. I believe that Paul Stride, he was in a frenzy at this point, and he just had to kill somebody, anybody, and Paul Stride was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, there is many. The last, I will read the one, the Z340, because that was the one they just cracked. And when I read that, I thought, they wrote that they caught the Zodiac, which would have been just amazing. Oh, that would have been so cool. But unfortunately, it wasn't that. What the message said, and it was supposed to have his name there. Originally he said, if you figure this out, my name's in there. But it doesn't seem like that's so. This is what the message says. I hope you're having lots of fun in trying to catch me. That wasn't me on the TV show, which brings up a point about me. I am not afraid of the gas chamber because it will send me to paradise all the sooner, because I now have enough slaves to work for me, where everyone else has nothing when they reach paradise, so they are afraid of death. I am not afraid of death, because I know that my new life will be an easy one in paradise death. Now, it's amazing that all these years, you know, this guy was obsessed with this paradise and death, and many schizophrenics and people that are mentally disturbed, they believe, killers in general, they have this feeling that when they kill people, they become a part of them and that they will control them in death. That is very, he is right in line with a killer. He really does fit that mold. The problem is with the Zodiac, is that there's no consistency with him. It's a shame because in the book, here, let me get some of the, and Zodiac Unmasked, Robert Graysmith really fingered this author, Leigh Allen, as the guy. Like, he just has no doubt in his mind. He feels it. And, you know, if you feel it, he really did write a fantastic book. But there are problems with Arthur Leigh Allen. All of the evidence against him is no DNA, no fingerprints, palm prints, nothing matched him. And for the sake of, because this was the most oft made one, I will go through some of what the evidence was against him. Mike Magoo, which had been the one with Darlene in the car, and when the guy shot them and he felt the handle, and there was no handle there. He said, I felt like a sitting duck. I could not get away from him. He just kept shooting. He picked Allen out of a police lineup. Surviving victim Brian Hartnell identified his voice and physical appearance as being similar to the Zodiac. Circumstantial evidence includes that through the premise of writing a book, he told his friend Don Cheney that he would like to kill couples randomly. He wanted to taunt the police with letters and details of his crimes. He would sign the letters with the cross circle symbol from his watch, which was the Zodiac watch with the circle and the cross through it. He wanted to call himself Zodiac one day. He would wear makeup to change his appearance. And he would attach a flashlight to the barrel of his gun. That's how he had the Zodiac. At night, he said he had a little flashlight, pencil flashlight, that he would attach to the gun scope so that when he shot, he could get a better aim. And whatever he shot that flashlight at, it would. That's how he was so accurate, he claims. Allen was born on December 18th, around the same time the Zodiac told attorney Melvin Belli's housekeeper over the phone that it was his birthday and he needed to kill someone. Allen lived in Vallejo near the Blue Rock Springs and Lake Herman Road murders. Allen was allegedly in Riverside on the weekend when Sherry Joe Bates was murdered. He later claimed to be in Pomona when he heard of Bates' murder. Allen took his only sick day of the year on November 1st, 1966, and Bates was murdered on October 30th, 1966. That's if the Bates is truly the victim of the Zodiac. The Vallejo Police Department seized a Royal typewriter with Elite type from Allen's home, which is the same brand of typewriter used to write the Bates letters. To date, the typewriter has not been compared to the Bates letters. He received a Zodiac watch from his mother for Christmas in 1967. Allen communicated to his friend Philip that he was fascinated with the idea of killing people. And he did have this thing with killing animals. He did get caught molesting children, and that's why he was kicked out of being a school teacher. An elementary school teacher. Now, which brings me back to when he would taunt the police by saying he was going to kill a school load of children on a bus. He consistently used children, but I'm not so sure if that was to put, you know, because of course when you say children, it's going to strike more fear into the heart of investigators. Nobody wants a school load of children to be killed. I don't know if it was that or because he had a thing with kids. So that's interesting. And it goes on and on and on about his wife stated that he was taught to write right-handed as a child, even though he was left-handed, so he became quite ambidextrous, which is why the handwriting evidence might not have matched. Some of the exculpatory evidence, the eyewitness of the Stein murder scene claimed that Allen was not the man they saw. They saw what happened and they thought it was a robbery, but they were not under particular duress, so they got a good look at this guy, where when the other people, Mike McGew and Brian Hartnell, they were under such duress. I mean, they just got shot. This guy's getting stabbed. It makes you go in circles. The fingerprints, palm prints did not match. DNA didn't match. His handwriting was not a match. He did not wear glasses, but Mike McGew did not see any glasses. And he was old with gray-black hair, not brown hair. He died of a heart attack on August 26, 1992, before investigators could get a chance to talk to him. You can look up Arthur Leigh Allen, and there's many, many Zodiac killer Wikipedia, Zodiac. There's all kinds of Zodiac sites out there. And just to see for yourself what you think, I have another person in mind. But I do respect what Robert Graysmith, which there was also a scene in a movie. There was a guy named Richard Marshall. He was a ham radio operator and a movie projectionist. He lived in Riverside in 1966 and later in San Francisco near where Stein was murdered. Visitors to his home told police they found him peculiar and that he had talked about finding something much more exciting than sex. Marshall liked old movies, including The Red Phantom, which was mentioned in a 1974 Zodiac letter. He lived in a basement apartment, which the Zodiac also cited, and he owned a typewriter and a teletype similar to those that the Zodiac used. He both liked felt-tip pens and odd-sized paper. Also, this was the part in the movie which was so frightening when Jake Gyllenhaal, who's portraying Robert Graysmith, and it's in the book too, when he goes in there, you know, this is when they're showing how obsessed that Robert Graysmith started to become when he went into this guy's house. The guy he talked to was named Bob Vaughn. He was talking to him about Richard Marshall. He said, you know, he led him into the basement to find this canister that supposedly would explode when you opened it, but had all the secrets of the Zodiac or something to that effect. It was a canister that he was looking for. So he said he did not have the canister, that Richard Marshall took it back from him. So they go down into the basement. Robert Graysmith said, "I could hear footsteps upstairs." I have chills in the back of my neck from this because it is scaring me a little bit, because I can just picture being in this guy's basement. You've been looking for the Zodiac for years and years, and then you're in this creepy guy's basement and you hear footsteps upstairs. I mean, you have to, he said he just hightailed it out of there. So it's just, it is a creepy, creepy thing. I mean, I think he became so obsessed with this, wanting to know who it was. And when you're reading this, you want to know who the Zodiac Killer is. I still want to know who this guy was. It's frustrating. That's Richard Marshall, why they rule him out. There was a 1989 TV interview. He denied being the Zodiac. Napa County Sheriff Detectives, who pursued the case for decades, said Marshall makes good reading, but not a very good suspect for whatever the reasons. Yeah, I mean, the evidence is kind of paltry. There's one guy, okay, I'm going to save him for last because he's a good one. And he is agreed upon right now among all the Zodiac websites. He is kind of top of the food chain due to certain things that cannot be refuted. So then we have Lawrence Kane. Lawrence Kane worked in the same Lake Tahoe hotel as Donna Lass, who disappeared in 1970. But they can't even agree if she is a Zodiac victim. He served in the Naval Reserves, where he might have learned coding. And a 1962 car accident left him with a brain injury that could have compromised his ability to control urges. He was arrested for peeping in 1961 and prowling in 1968. That's pretty good. A retired police detective investigating the case claims that Kane's name was embedded in one of the Zodiac ciphers, and that Darlene's sister, Linda, had identified a photo of Kane as the man that she had saw bothering Darlene at a restaurant. A San Francisco police officer who probably saw the Zodiac moments after Stein's murder said Kane's photo was closer than any other likeness he had seen. And Kathleen Johns, the one who had escaped from the man, the one with the infant, also identified a photo of Kane as the abductor. I don't know quite what happened with Kathleen Johns, but I'm not so sure she got the Zodiac because, I don't know, it doesn't have a Zodiac ring to me. I don't know, you know. Now, I'm going to leave that for last. Let's see, there's Richard Marshall. Richard Gajkowski, why he is suspected. Richard Gajkowski was an He edited a counterculture newspaper in San Francisco. A former coworker sent long, rambling letters to law enforcement agencies accusing him of being the Zodiac and said Gajkowski invited him to engage in violent acts together. The accuser, nicknamed Goldcatcher, appeared in disguise on an episode of the History Channel's Mystery Quest in 2009 and provided recordings of Gajkowski's voice. On the show, a police dispatcher who spoke to the Zodiac said she thought it was the same voice. Researcher Tom Voigt also noticed that Geik appears in a part of a cipher that Zodiac said contained his identity. Goldcatcher was a known conspiracy theorist with little credibility. One of the top three Zodiac kooks. He's not ringing a bell. Jack Terrence, David Kaufman also received extensive publicity claiming that his late stepfather, Jack Terrence, was the Zodiac. Dead ringer for the composite sketch, claimed to have a stash of incriminating incidents, including a roll of film depicting possible victims and a bizarre hooded costume like the one the Zodiac wore during the Lake Berryessa stabbings. On a 2007 Discovery Channel documentary, a document examiner said Terrence's handwriting matched the Zodiac's. Law enforcement officials dismissed Kaufman's evidence as nonsense. One photo showed, it just doesn't sound like it. The hooded costume he claimed was not so fabulous. And this is from history.com's. They had a real nice breakdown of the eight people who are most often referred to as the Zodiac, if you wanted to look this up. It is pretty fascinating. Now, Donald Lee Bujak, the hooded man who stabbed the couple at Lake Berryessa City, had just escaped from a prison in Montana, according to Brian Hartnell, who survived the attack. Researcher Kevin Brooks developed a lengthy circumstantial case implicating this man who was released from a Montana penitentiary. Fellow inmate said he talked about killing people and making them slaves in the afterlife. He claimed the Halloween card. There was a famous Halloween card sent to reporter Paul Avery. That is actually, the Halloween card seems to be what, when, you know, again, back then, we didn't get information the same way. Information wasn't obtained the same way. The Halloween card written to Paul Avery had gained notoriety, and that's when they started connecting a few of the other cases, such as the Sherry Joe Bates, once they in the Domingo and Edwards cases. I mean, before that, there just wasn't, they were just unsolved cases. When the Zodiac came about, that's when they started putting things together. And I have to say, that Domingo and Edwards case is just like the Berryessa, the Lake Berryessa. I mean, the cut rope and all that, it very much rings true. So Bujak's fingerprints did not match, and they said the prison was in Colorado, not Montana, that he was in jail in the lake during the Lake Herman killings. I don't know. Some, you know, there's a reason some of them are thought to be. This one I thought was amusing. There's a guy named Earl Van Best Jr. He had wrote, now, Gary Stewart wrote a book in 2014, The Most Dangerous Animal of All, where he made a great case that his biological father, Earl Van Best, was a Zodiac. He resembled the Zodiac. He lived in California at the times of the killings. He was a Satanist and, a Manson family member, which brings me to some really oddball ones. There's one that Ted Cruz is a Zodiac, and then the BTK killer is the Zodiac. But one that I don't think is so goofy. Now think about it. In 1969, that is when what happened? The most infamous case of all, the case of, I mean, I think this is why the Zodiac at the time didn't like knock it out of the park as far as being so worldwide well known, is because Manson came and killed Sharon Tate. You know, the Manson murders and the LaBiancas. And that case I always knew about. And I, even as a kid, I helter skelter, all that. I up and down, I should do that case because I know that one a lot better. And I've been reading about it my whole life. This one completely took me by surprise when they solved that Z-340. And again, that's why I started I did not know this case was this fascinating. So in 1969, there was all those killings in Los Angeles, but what if Manson had a few of his friends up in the San Francisco area? I mean, it's a possibility. I mean, that's a total conspiracy theory and off the wall, but I don't know. Something about that, it rings true to me. I mean, in so far as it's not as goofy as any other theories, maybe it was, but they were so like into shining a light on themselves. I'm sure at this point we would have probably heard. It's just food for thought. You never know. So let's go back to this one, because this one was kind of amusing. This guy writes this book and people are like, wow, it, you know, he's making a compelling argument. He claims to have found best initials in the Zodiac ciphers, and a document examiner said that the handwriting on best marriage certificate matched the Zodiac's. And this was it. This is the big thing. He solved the mystery until they found out that the marriage certificate was the minister's handwriting, not best. As for best resemblance, I saw this picture. He did not have, that is not a widow's peak. That's a receding hairline. I completely agree with that. One of the things that the guy, Mike from Zodiac Killer site, he said when he was going through the who could it be, he said that this Edward Van Best had a, it had a receding hairline. I completely agree with them. That is not a widow's peak. I know people with widow's peaks. Widow's peaks are distinct. Your hairline literally is putting boobies on top of a head. Like you're, it's a, it like comes forth. A receding hairline, it's all the way back in a half moon. Not booby shaped, half moon shaped. And this guy did not have a widow's peak. Who has a widow's peak, I say? This one that I waited to the last, and I am telling you, Ross Sullivan. All right, first of all, when I was just looking at the murders and reading about the murders, before I got to, I didn't want to be swayed by anybody. So I really didn't listen. I just read about the murders first, and I refused to listen to anything until the end. Because I wanted to think about who would have done this. I wanted to like immerse myself. And when I get these feelings, you know, when I was sitting there thinking about the Zodiac and reading about him and reading about they're all kids except for Paul Stein. And I do believe that was because he was getting like a hunger for it. What happened? I don't know what happened after Paul Stein. Maybe he got, I don't know. What happened to Jack the Ripper, you know? I do believe that all these kids, this, what he wrote on that one girl, that's why I do think she is part of the Zodiac. Sherry Bates, the guy that worked in the library was named Ross Sullivan. The whole time I was reading this, I'm thinking, this sounds like a kid. Even the guy in Lake Berryessa, the Hartnell guy, he said that he really thought that it sounded like a kid, not a stupid kid, but not completely educated, which is exactly how he comes off. You know, now people were thinking he was older because of certain phrases he used, but that doesn't necessarily, I don't know. I just kept thinking kid, kid, kid. Now this Ross Sullivan, okay. The 1966 murder of Shari Joe Bates in Riverside, California, bore many similarities to the Zodiac killings. Staffers at the Riverside City College, where Bates' body was found, said Ross Sullivan, who worked at the library, made them uncomfortable and disappeared for days after the murder. And I am going to tell you, well, first of all, this is even more so. He suffered from bipolar and schizophrenia, which goes right in line with when he talks about all those slaves in the afterlife. That's a big schizophrenic thing, thinking that you're going, that when you kill somebody, you're going to have these slaves in the afterlife. He wore an army jacket and military-style boots like those that left footprints at the Lake Berryessa stabbings. All of them have Y ruled out except for this guy. It's amazing. I mean, this, oh my God, I'm going to put this damn picture up on the RightShoePodcast.com. This guy is the spitting image. A couple of years ago, okay, this is from ZodiacCiphers.com. Who's in charge of ZodiacCiphers.com, but this is extensive as well. I implore you to go and investigate this case. It is absolutely fascinating. But if you go to ZodiacCiphers.com, Ross Sullivan's right on the front. You cannot forget the Shari Joe Bates murder. No doubt you have your prime suspect, as do the Riverside Police. The Riverside Police just don't believe that it was Ross Sullivan. They have their own suspect, but the DNA didn't match their suspect, but they're still, I don't know, people just seem to have their suspect, and they don't care what the heck matches or not. A couple of years ago, I called the police to ask about our suspect and was told he had an alibi for that night. Our response to that is his alibi would be too frightened not to agree with his alibi. That is very true. That is very, very true. All of us worked at RCC during this time and knew better than we care to know this. The reason for suspecting are all circumstantial, but we are all convinced enough about his potential for doing harm that even one faculty member doesn't want her name used. And he died in 1977, this guy. Okay, let's see what this guy says. One rainy night, after he was back in Riverside, I stopped at a liquor store. I pulled up alongside a car that was parked just in front of the store doors. When I ran back to the car, something told me to do a strange thing. I ran around to the passenger side, and in a flash, I had the door open and was inside, and the door locked behind me. Just at that instant, Ross came from around a large hedge in front of my car and walked between the two cars and out of the parking lot. He did not look at me. Needless to say, I drove out of there as quickly as possible. I don't know. I don't know what happened to this guy. I don't know. Ross Sullivan. Ross Sullivan was a mentally ill teenager when he was committed to the California Patton State Mental Hospital in the late 1950s and early 60s after his mom died. There was a great deal of evidence that he might have been the Zodiac Killer. I mean, he is a spitting image of those damn pictures. The spitting image. He has a widow's peak. He has the glasses. Although Mike Magoo said there was no glasses. This is the weird thing with the Zodiac. As soon as you get to one part, it's knocked off by another part. And I asked Homicide about this, and they said it is too long and too confusing. And to stop. And don't do any more serial killer podcasts, because they are insanely confusing. So many rabbit holes. I hope I, got at least the gist of the Zodiac Killer and what it was about. And for all you folks that want to look deeper, go to The Zodiac by Robert Graysmith first. Then possibly tackle The Zodiac Unmasked. Otherwise, watch that movie. because they did a pretty damn good job of, I mean, you really do have to read the book to understand, like, even in the beginning when they're showing Darlene, it's confusing if you didn't read the book, because there's a lot of stuff, and the fact that he knew her, and it said D when he shot, when Mike heard the Zodiac Killer say D when he was shooting them. So, that's my take on the Zodiac Killer. I'm throwing around stuff. Again, I always look, I've done mostly all the suggestions I have. I did want to say that there was a, I did go on my Instagram, I had went over this horrible story, a horrible killing about a young man, Jason Sweeney. And he was only 16 when he was killed. He was ruthlessly murdered by this girl had lured him into the park under the pretense of, like, making out or sex or whatnot. Him and so-called friends beat him to death with rocks. She was just let out. I had said her name on the, I don't want to say it because she's let out. I mean, but she was let out, and it's surprising to me. I don't think she should have been let out, but that's a shame. His parents got to be nuts about that. But I am working on, there's a couple of stories that I think I might do. I'm going to do a Philly one again. You know, go back to Philly next. There is a case that was brought to my attention, and it is the Stephanie Dzalski case. I'm probably murdering her name. I do want to go through that. So this is Debbie Q, and you're listening to The Right Show.